So I'm going to be talking about some research that we've been doing in Washington State, looking at male chlamydia screening. Okay, so some research we've been doing over the past year in Washington State, looking at the recommendations around male chlamydia screening. This is my agency, Cardia. So national recommendations around male chlamydia screening are basically that we shouldn't do it. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and CDC both say that there's just not sufficient evidence out there to weigh the benefits and the risks of screening for men. And additionally, CDC says that screening is valuable in settings with really high prevalence, and they specifically state adolescent clinics, correctional facilities, and STD settings. Family planning and reproductive health settings are not included in those that list of high prevalence venues. However, studies that recommended against male screening, those cost-effectiveness studies, assumed about a 5% male chlamydia prevalence or less. And there are studies out there showing that male screening can be cost-effective compared to expanded screening of females in situations where the male positivity is substantially higher. So, and just a little bit more background about what positivity looks like. A systematic review in 2008 found about 5% chlamydia positivity across a bunch of different clinic types and community-based organizations, a little bit lower in the clinical venues. Recent research we've been doing over the past 5 years, looking at family planning and primary care settings, has found much, much higher rates of infection, ranging from 6 to 24%, and actually in most clinics it was on that upper end. We've also got data from the National Infertility Prevention Project from a number of years showing high rates of infection among men, although there are some challenges there in not being able to tease out the screened population versus the population of men who have infected partners and maybe coming in for testing due to exposure. There was a study in 2012 that found 12% positivity among men in Region 6 family planning clinics, and also very high gonorrhea. And then the data that I'm going to be sharing today, which is sort of a work in progress, we found 15% positivity in Washington State overall, and 7% positivity among men who were screened, so removing the diagnostically tested males. So Washington State is our study population for this analysis because they had the foresight, as STD clinics were closing, to start doing universal male screening in their family planning reproductive health settings. So as far as I know, this is the only state that has been doing this and submitting data through IPP, so very interesting to look at. And they also have a great lab slip that we used across all of the states in Region 10 that collects demographic, risk behaviors, and service data. So our objectives were to assess male positivity according to demographics, individual risk factors, sexual network, and area-based socioeconomic measures, so trying to get at some of the social determinants of health. And then also to develop some efficiency and effectiveness algorithms to try to look at what might be the best steps moving forward for screening. So our methods were, as I said, we used data from Washington State. We looked at 2009 through 2011, merged in some of these area-based socioeconomic measures, and I'll share more of what those were in the results section, as well as RUCA codes, which just separate by rural-urban status. We excluded men who have sex with men and excluded diagnostic testing, and that left us with about 8,000 tests among men ages 15 to 44 in Washington State family planning and reproductive health clinics. So from there, we computed the positivity and stratified that by demographic, behavioral risk, sex partner concurrency, and those social determinant measures that I mentioned, and developed 11 potential screening algorithms based on the multivariate analysis. And looked at the efficiency and effectiveness of those different algorithms. So overall, 8,000 men were screened, and we had a positivity overall, as I mentioned before, of 7.3%, so pretty high. Looking at this by various demographic predictors, we saw, as we tend to see with women, much higher rates of infection among younger males, so 7.4% among males 15 to 19 versus 2.8% among males 36 and over, and that held true in the multivariate analysis as well. Also saw some similar trends to women when we looked at race. Black, Hispanic, and American Indian and Alaska Native males had significantly higher rates of infection, which also held true in the multivariate analysis. We next looked at individual behavioral risk factors. I don't have all these numbers memorized, so. And we found that having had multiple sex partners in the last 60 days and having not used a condom during the last sex were significantly associated with higher rates of infection. Having had a new sex partner in the last 60 days or having had a concurrent sex partner in the last 60 days, so a partner who has had other partners, did not turn out to be significant in the multivariate analysis. Looking at urban-rural status, we saw very little difference. And then moving on to those social determinant factors. So we looked at people who were coming from communities with higher levels of poverty in the community and found not a whole lot of difference there. It looked like it initially, but in the multivariate analysis, those differences didn't hold. But the second one is really interesting. We found that people coming from communities with 20% of people not having a high school diploma had nearly four times the rate of infection. So that was really fascinating. We also looked at the distribution of race in the communities and found, interestingly, that as the percent minority race increases, that the risk of chlamydia infection actually decreased. So it was about half when we got to communities with over 50% minority. So in summary, chlamydia is very common in this population, and I'll remind you, Washington State tends to have lower rates of infection than a lot of the rest of the country. And we saw that for the most part, the predictors mirror what we've seen in females. Young and minority males tend to be at increased risk, men with multiple sex partners and not having used condoms tend to have higher rates of infection. We saw that lower community high school completion rate was important, and surprisingly that the racial ethnic makeup of the community also had an inverse relationship to what we were expecting. The next step was to put some of these findings into some algorithms and look at whether we could come up with an efficient and an effective way to screen these men. So efficiency, and this will become more clear in the next slide, but efficiency, we said, was basically the percentage of these males that we wouldn't need to screen. So we could, the higher it is, the more efficient we are. And effectiveness is the percentage of cases that would be detected using that algorithm. So these are the 11 algorithms that we tried, and as you can see, as is always the case, efficiency goes up, effectiveness tends to go down, and that's just sort of the way it works. So if you were to screen no young men, you would have really high efficiency, but you'd have really low effectiveness because you wouldn't find any cases. And so we started off with the just the age and then the individual risk factors, and then we built in some of those community factors as well. And what we found was, I don't think there was a smoking gun per se, but screening based on age 20 to 25, or having had, reporting multiple sex partners, or being from one of those communities with low high school completion rates, we found that we could cut the number of men we needed to screen by 33% and still detect 77% of the cases. So we thought that was pretty good. So in conclusion, chlamydia positivity is really high among men in Washington State, even when we look at a screened population. Young and minority males are at increased risk, and I'll mention we also found some social determinant factors that were of interest as well. And I think in making decisions about male and female screening, you really need to weigh the positivity in both of those groups as well as the resource levels that you have available to guide your test allocation. And as CDC folks are always saying to us, you know, use your local data. So screening all males, even if we hadn't used these effectiveness and efficiency algorithms, screening all males over 25, I think, would likely be cost-effective based on what the literature says. The studies we've looked at have said that if the male positivity is 2 times as high as it is in a population of females that we're looking to screen, that it's actually more cost-effective to screen males. And if any of you were in my colleague David Fine's presentation this morning, you would have seen that our positivity among females aged 25 and older was 2.7% in this region, versus 7.3% among males screened in Washington. So I think this is an argument for potentially shifting the way we've been approaching this. And then lastly, the algorithms that we looked at show that selective screening based on behavioral risk and community factors could further enhance the cost effectiveness of this. So if we didn't screen all of these guys, but we screened a subset of them, we could be even more cost effective. And lastly, I think ongoing research is needed. This was Washington State. It was not the entire country. But as we move into this new era of healthcare reform and STD clinics close, I think we need to keep looking at this issue and need to identify whether there are any other denominators out there that we could potentially use that have a universally screened population of males. So thank you. Any questions?
Yes, Tom Peterman, thanks for that talk. I'm wondering if some of the men who were tested for symptoms rather than being screened, and how that might influence your finding.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And we actually removed them from this analysis. I did do a presentation earlier last summer where we looked at all of the men and tried to sort of separate out, you know, how many of them are coming in with symptoms and with multiple, exposure and other issues, because I think that's equally interesting that those men are accessing our family planning clinics for services. But in this particular population, we removed anybody who reported symptoms, anybody who reported exposure, and a couple other factors that I can look up and tell you later. Yeah.
Just want to make a quick comment about the age-specific prevalence distribution. It's not nearly as dramatic as it is for women. And I think it deserves a little more dissection, not the purpose of your talk. This is not a criticism. It's just making a point that the 20 to 24-year-old boys, males, have a higher infection rate than 15 to 19.
Yes.
And one of the major points is that they are the ones who are having sex with the 15 to 19-year-old girls who are at highest prevalence. So there's a little juggling game, to be played there with targeting the populations. And I defy you to come up with a cost-benefit analysis that works.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think that was a point that was also raised in the last plenary discussion, and I agree it's really important to pay attention to. So thank you.